In a world full of boring stories, bad videos, and marketing misinformation, one very tall man with a weird last name will use his microphone.
Is this thing on?
Use his video marketing knowledge.
It's the red button, right?
And use his friends.
Please be on the show.
To change that. You are listening to the Garlic Marketing Show with Ian. What? No, that's how you pronounce it. Well, if you say so, your host, Ian Garlic. Welcome to the Garlic Marketing Show. Ian Garlic here, and today's guest is an old friend, an amazing developer doing some interesting things that if you don't listen to him, you could get sued. I know some people that have been sued, and it's not a pretty lawsuit, but if you do it right, you could help your web users out. But before we get started, this show is brought to you by Authentic Web. If you're looking to help create a website that tells your story, you know, video is the way to go. And if you want video and website combined, that really works. Make sure to go to authenticweb.media. All right, my good friend, Jamie Lane, thanks for being on the show, bud.
Thanks for having me, Ian. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too. I know we're doing this over Skype, and he's like, what, 10 miles away? and I never see him or, you know, his beautiful wife, who's a good friend also. And it's sad. We're too busy. We need to make that happen. But let's talk about this. Let's talk about ADA compliance, which is interesting because this is not ABA compliance. This is not Bar Association compliance. This is, tell me a little bit about the, what ADA compliance is and how it affects websites. Let's just talk about that first.
Absolutely. So ADA compliance is the American Disabilities Act compliance, and that's, you know, ensuring that your website is accessible to anyone with a disability. And I think the biggest thing that most people aren't clear on inside of, you know, modern relationships is what exactly is a disability. It's not just being blind. It's not just being deaf. It's not having just motor skill issues. The gamut of spectrum of issues that are covered by the ADA is massive. They say about 36 million individuals within the U.S. have some form of disability.
Wow. That's a lot. So why, you know, I have alt tags. I have all this stuff. How is my website even prone to, why should I care about this?
Well, if you have a physical presence, if you have a retail store, a dentist office, a restaurant, your website is an extension of that business. And what that means is users who are trying to find you, access your public place of accommodation, your website is acting as that digital gateway for those users who are not able to necessarily get to your business to get to the same services, such as, you know, finding where you're located, buying a product, seeing what your office hours are, how to contact you. So if your website isn't being accessible to those users, in essence, you are you're causing problems. You're excluding people from your service.
Interesting. Yeah, and it's changed recently a lot, right? Because it changed in the past few years. It used to be a little less, and now it's become more. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So year over year, over the past, I think, 3 to 5 years, the number of accessibility lawsuits has grown exponentially. And the reason being is that the laws have become a little bit in that gray area for what has been approved as being our website's part of your physical presence or not. And as certain lawsuits go through, as they're accepted as being, yes, this person was damaged by not being able to access their website service, more lawsuits are showing up. And your websites are truly an extension of your business. It's the best way to allow for people with disabilities to access your goods and services. So by not making it inclusive in the first place, you really are excluding them.
Oh, yeah. And you're talking about lawsuits. You know, most people think, that's not my business. I'm not going to get sued. But how prevalent are these lawsuits and how expensive are they?
A, they're very prevalent, and B, they're expensive. So from a prevalence perspective, there are, unfortunately, these drive-by lawyers that are sending out thousands of legal issues. So tickets to businesses that indicate, hey, by the way, you might be, here's a problem that we've identified. Here's the face that we're attaching this lawsuit to. And they're just ultimately hoping that people just pay them off to make it go away. And the biggest issue inside of that space, so specific businesses are being targeted, the Title III ones. So restaurants are being hit hard, doctor's offices are being hard, retail stores are being hit hard. As each new lawsuit either gains traction or doesn't gain traction, with the number that's being sent out, they're hoping that people just pay them off to try to make them go away. And the issue at hand is paying them off doesn't make the issue go away. You're not actually helping your customers who actually have a disability use your website. So you're still technically at risk. You may not be able to get hit by that same lawsuit again, but you're still excluding a certain audience, and you could be grounds for additional lawsuits as the laws keep growing and changing.
And yeah, and I mean, can you tell me a little bit, when we say expensive, what are some of the ranges of lawsuits that you've seen?
Well, I'm not a lawyer myself, so I can't get into some of those specifics. I know I've heard from local business owners that are getting hit with $10,000 to $30,000 just to make it go away. And some of the class action lawsuits for larger businesses have been in the range of millions.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen, what was it? Was it Five Guys that got sued? Winn-Dixie's been sued.
Domino's is probably the most recent big company that's been hit with it. And one of their most notable issues that occurred this year was that their mobile application actually was part of the lawsuit as well. So it's no longer just the physical presence, the website presence, but the mobile app itself was also the target of this lawsuit.
And you said before, too, it's like it's not just for your your usual disabilities. What are some of the specifics, out of the ordinary things that are really triggering some of these lawsuits?
Oh, absolutely. So a lot of it is getting into your website is being able to accommodate things like keyboard control. So a lot of your standard users who have a subset of your users who have disabilities can't use mouse. So they need to have a assistive technology device or just a keyboard to be able to navigate your website. And if your website is built in a way that the links aren't activatable by keyboard commands, like you have hover text effects that only happen when you mouse over it, buttons that are not really buttons that you have to activate by pushing it, like a div element that has a custom script to it. So the modern web design is powerful. I mean, there's a lot of great tools to build really interactive websites. But those tools aren't necessarily accessible to begin with. So the developers have to take the time to add the features to make it accessible if they're making this, you know, very interactive, engaging, reactive web technology.
And so, I mean, you've been a developer for years. Were you ever taught any of this stuff before engaging it as a business?
No, not whatsoever. So coming out of school, I had a double honors in math and computer science. I learned high-level application development, worked for IBM, got into media design, started working on websites. And accessibility has always been a side avenue that only a small set of really proactive users that were evangelists for accessibility in the early 2000s were saying, hey, by the way, you should consider this. And for big businesses that understood that, that took accessibility as a strategy for the business line, started adopting it early on. But it was no formal training that really was being spoon-fed saying, as a developer, you should learn these things. You should learn ARIA. You should learn WCAG. You should learn how to build websites that are accessible from the beginning instead of trying to change them retroactively.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting, too, because, Jessica, wife, partner, teaches web development at big school, and very few people knew anything about this because I was trying to find out information, right when you start doing it too. And it's crazy. No one's being taught it. I've talked to other agency owners. They know so little about it. And, and to your point too, it's small businesses. It's, right. It's not, everyone thinks, well, it's just going to be this big business. But it's a small business that are getting shaken down.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's unfortunate. Like, the size for the business doesn't matter. For these drive-by lawsuits, it's volume. When they're sending out thousands, they're targeting businesses as small as mom-and-pop shops that have a physical presence and they have a poorly put-together website that says, hey, by the way, here's a lawsuit. They don't know how to use it. They don't even have a developer. They aren't using an agency. It was just some template that was bought and put up off of a standard hosting provider. And next thing you know, it's a gateway for them to be targeted because they don't know any better. They're not being informed what are the accessibility laws for how to manage digital media.
No, not at all. No, and everyone thinks it's one of those things that they're not thinking about. But on the flip side, the same thing has been happening for years from a physical location standpoint where attorneys drive by and they'll nitpick little things that you didn't know were an ADA issue.
Absolutely.
And so it's not something that's completely out of the ordinary. And the other part to know that is, right, and we'll talk about the criteria, but the criteria aren't set in stone, per se, are they?
No. So it's an interesting position because the principle of accessibility guidelines right now is the WCAG, which is the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines, put by the W3C. Originally, those were just standard guidelines that were recommendations for, you know, a group got together to say, okay, how do we make the web more accessible so people can follow these best practices and standardize them? What happened is when lawsuits got involved, there wasn't meticulous rules about how someone should conform to or be compliant with web accessibility. So when the DOJ got involved, they just said, well, here's these guidelines, the WCAG. Let's make these the de facto standard for if it doesn't follow these rules, you're not in compliance. If it follows them, great. You don't have a case. So now developers are struggling to figure out how to use WCAG. Other lawyers are trying to figure out how to use it as a potential weapon of saying you're not meeting this standard. Here you're at risk.
Yeah, and also, I mean, the law really is it's. There's not really a law. The DOJ is enforcing it, but there's not really a law per se, right?
No strict law directly that I can allude to. It's just everything goes back to the ADA, the initial ADA law. So yes, there was an initial law that came about when the American Disabilities Act itself came about. There was a set of rules and regulations about, okay, this is how your business had to operate within that. And one of the rules subset inside of that one is that you can't exclude users from your public place of accommodation. You have to ensure like equal access for all. Mm. And so the web presence falls under their place of physical property, so to speak, and needs to have equal access for all. So how does a website become equivalent place of technology? You have to be able to ensure that they meet these WCAG guidelines.
Yeah, and I will get in the guidelines in a second, but what are some of the things that, I mean, what are some of the ones that you're seeing people getting tagged for? What are some of the big things that people are doing wrong, the top things?
The easiest one for people to not pay attention to and get hit by these drive-by lawsuits is anything to do with visual. So your screen reader users, the people who are considered having they're either blind or have low vision. So websites that don't have properly configured alt tags, and an alt tag isn't just it's there or it's not there. You really need to be determining whether or not it's actually providing value to the user. So if you have a very image-heavy website, you want to first ask yourself the question, are these images fluff? Like, is it just decorative? Like, they're not providing any contributional value. If they strip away all the images on the website, do they get the same value? Turn it off. And if so, all those images should be marked as decorative, which is having an empty alt tag. However, images that need to have descriptions, many designers or developers are just talking about the image. They're not necessarily describing the contents of the image because they're not really writers. So if you had a picture that just said bookcase, okay, is that enough for someone to get the context of, well, if this is an e-commerce website, maybe it should be the product name of the bookcase, how tall it is, how many shelves it has, what color it is. It's like information that might be beneficial that a sighted user could see that describes the image versus bookcase. It's pretty generic. Same thing goes with car. Well, there's a broad spectrum of what car means.
Yeah. And so on the flip side, what are the positives of becoming compliant? Besides, you know, I mean, obviously, you have better users. You give users more ability. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, beyond just user experience is hands down one of the best elements inside of it because you have greater tools for more users to use. And you may not realize that you're probably causing problems for a subset of users that you didn't even consider are under disability qualification. So someone that has low vision, so if someone has astigmatism or just glasses, or your aging population, the baby boomers, who are not necessarily going to say, I'm actually legally blind, but they have enough low vision that they're using screen magnification or they're using the browser zoom. If your website doesn't operate well under those conditions, you're still being exclusionary. And that's a massive amount of users to contribute financial value to your website. So by having accessibility built into your website, A, you could be gaining more users from other businesses that you're stealing them away from because they're not accessible to your competitors, as well as you're giving your better user experience to your current users who may not necessarily be complaining or thinking they need to sue you because they're not getting the best experience, but they're not happy. So they may just be doing one or two things on your website when they could be doing 20 to 30 things, yeah, depending on what type of business you are.
And that's an incredible point, because a lot of people aren't going to call you up and say, I can't use your website. Nope, 99.999% of the people aren't going to do that. They're just going to go to the next website.
Absolutely.
And like a lot of our clients are, if you're an attorney or a doctor or, we're doing stuff in stem cells. If your website isn't ADA compliant, a lot of your potential clients are having low vision, have astigmatism, have cataracts. So if they can't use it, they go someplace else, right?
Absolutely.
And that value per client, given the cost of it, if your client's worth $5,000, well, it's worth spending a few thousand dollars on a scan and fixing it.
Oh, absolutely. Particularly, you increase the lifetime value, the likelihood of them not going away, and they start telling their friends, which is like, well, hey, I was able to use this. Maybe you could too. There you go. Self-promotion. The social value of having an accessible website, just promoting it out there, saying we have a strategic goal to make accessibility part of our business, that puts you inside of good merit, inside of social view as well. So it's not just saying we're doing this because we have to. That's not a great reason to implement accessibility as a whole. But if you're doing it because you are committed to equal access for all, and that gets picked up from a social perspective, and then you have a stance behind this is why you're committed to doing this work, yeah, you'll attract more people than you actually pushed away.
Yep. And the expense becomes minor of getting there. And
well, the expense of a full-blown lawsuit is not it's 10 times as much of what you'd actually invest into getting it correct in the first place.
Exactly. So there's, there's a loss and an advantage of gain. Plus, from just the alt tag side, that increases search engine value, increases your rankings, increases how much Google's going to crawl it and how much information they have.
Absolutely. I know alt tags are probably one of the most minor elements of accessibility, but it does provide value, particularly as you said, with an SEO perspective. Google's change to SEO algorithms is heavily context centric. So when some developers are old school methodologies with SEO, which were stuffing your alt tags with terrible text just to gain rankings, it's not providing value to the website. It's actually decreasing value from a search engine perspective. But Google seeing that your page is loading fast, your user audience is not bouncing right away because they actually find value because it's accessible, and the description of the images are actually in line with what the content of the image is as well, so it's providing value there too. Yeah, you'll actually increase your rankings.
You'll increase your rank. And I'd be willing to bet that we're going to see some algorithm updates, especially because they know people that have low vision that have these disabilities, that they'll start ranking these sites that are more and more compliant up higher because they want a better user experience.
They're already doing that. Absolutely.
Are they?
Yep.
There you go. So, you're spending, $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 a month on SEO and you don't have a compliant website. Does that make sense? absolutely not.
Right.
So let's talk about the factors. How many factors are there? What are some of the factors? What are some of the obvious ones? What are some of the unobvious ones?
Well, the high level principles are there. Your website must be perceivable. So that means that you have to be able to see and understand how the website works. And by see, it's not just actual vision. It must be perceivable to assistive technology. And inside of that perceivable section, there are, four major content sections that fall under perceivability, which has to do with images, it has to do with video, it has to do with audio, it has to do with color, it has to be distinguishable. So overall, the WCAG has probably 37 or 40 like sub-bullets about how to implement each section. So beyond perceivability is operability, and that means the website has to be usable. So if a user is using keyboard navigation, or they have to be able to pause a video or play a video, or some work with interactivity, it has to be interactive for all tools. So not just a mouse, it has to be operable for a keyboard. It has to be operable for what's called a puff and sip device. So that's someone who's in a mobility issue that has to use a mouth puffer to actually be able to interact with the keyboard, interact with their website. So the number of assistive tools that exist out there for specialized disabilities is massive. So operability has to, from a standard perspective, the website has to be operable for all the tools. Next thing is about understandability. And that one's ensuring that elements such as your errors are announced to a screen reader and they're visible. So you have websites, so you're filling out a form, you put in your credit card information, and you highlight all the input fields that have an error in red. Well, what if someone's colorblind? You know, they can't see that there's any errors on the page. There's no error message. So you have to make sure that, you know, that your errors are perceivable, they're understandable, they're announced to a screen reader, they're not just highlighted in some color that someone can't perceive. And the last thing is about robust, and this is about forward thinking. So using things like an HTML parser, your website has to be parsable. So many modern CMS tools put together behind the scenes probably the worst markup you may have ever seen, because they're not thinking about the accessibility of it. As long as it works, who cares about parsability? Well, parsability does affect tools that are reliant on standards. So again, using the screen readers, using Braille keyboard devices that are trying to interpret the content of the screen and transcribe them to Braille output. So as long as you're following standards, it needs to be, again, parsable. You have to understand the name or custom input control value. So you have buttons. What is the button label? What does the button do? Having a button that just says go is not really clear if you don't know the context of that button.
All right. So at this point, I understood everything that you said, but I would say 85% of our listeners are looking up at least one of those things that you just said. But what's awesome is if you go to martechnology.com/offer, Jamie is offering up. Tell me a little bit about what you're offering there.
All right. So what I'm offering is a micro review of one page on your website to determine whether or not you're at risk. And it will help you summarize the baseline, whether or not there are some existing accessibility issues that exist on your website. Just on even one page, how at risk are you? Because usually if your one page is at risk, most likely your whole website's at risk. And conformance and compliance from a website perspective, particularly if you're trying to adhere to a lawsuit, your whole website has to be compliant and conform. So you can't just rely on one page. But at least it gives you the insight of saying, am I likely at risk? And then you start determining if you want to put some effort and budget into providing deeper audit and analysis for the website, put together a strategic plan for implementing and rolling this out, or even consult your developer agency about planning a rebrand launch if it's extremely incompliant. Like maybe you want to start fresh as an opportunity to say, you know what, I haven't updated my doctor website in 15 years. Maybe it's time to start fresh instead of fixing what's broken.
Yeah. I mean, and like just operability alone, because you said something there in those three major categories. But what I want people to understand is that shopping cart abandonment, which also means filling out forms, is like 75%. And that's for people that know how to use it. So if you can make it more operable for these more people, and also for the people that are filling it out that have full capabilities, you're going to make a lot more money. You're going to get a lot more leads. You're going to have a lot more happy clients. And I think that it's a big opportunity. So people shouldn't look at this as a fear as much as an opportunity to improve, to get yourself ahead, because more people see your website than see your any of your other stuff. You spend all this money on a building. You spend all this money on fancy clothes, uniforms for your clients. Make your website the most accessible, most awesome thing there is. I think it's a very, very good point to do.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
So tell me a little bit about how, like, some of the clients that you're working with, is there anyone that you're finding that is 100% in line by time?
No. However, there are some businesses that have invested early on. They have usually, I work with some pretty large scale businesses, and they have their own development team. And the ones that have heavily invested in having accessibility as a strategy rolled out are on a great track. And they're going through the method of actually reviewing on a frequent basis to ensure that what their development team is producing still meets standards, because it takes someone with a certification to really be able to review and analyze the results. So, like, developers can pick up the process, learn how the development works, learn the tools, learn the technologies. But it's easy to miss little things if they're not careful. And that's why a third-party reviewer can help see and realign that strategy. It's the businesses that they're coming out of the blue that are doing it poorly. They've hired a development agency that said, yeah, I can make things accessible, without having a background of insight or knowledge on how to do that. So they're learning accessibility on their client's dime. And what happens there is poorly implemented ARIA or accessibility controls inside of a website actually make a website less accessible than more accessible. So doing things wrong can actually hurt the results more so than help the results.
Interesting. Interesting. Can you give me an example?
A good example would be, so ARIA is accessibility rich interactive application tools. They're little attributes that you can convert your on-page elements into kind of robust elements. So a good example is you can make an accordion widget, which you see pretty common on a few FAQs that exist on websites out there. The accordion is, you click on a header, extra content pulls down. So to define that structure, you have to add the correct roles and attributes and keyboard functionality to it. If someone doesn't understand the roles and attributes, they could incorrectly nest the element 4, 5, 6 times. So a screen reader might read it off as ARIA button, ARIA button, ARIA menu, ARIA button, ARIA listed. Like, may read off 17 elements that the user's not even seeing the content of what it is. It's reading off all this extra markup that isn't visible to a screen. Like, if someone's looking on the screen and say, hey, look, the accordion looks fantastic. But to a screen reader, they would abandon instantly because they're being hit by markup hell that isn't giving them any extra value to understanding the content.
Interesting. Interesting. And when it comes to content, you know, and putting new content on a website and videos, and, like, especially video, what are some of the criteria that we should look at? If I now have an ADA compliant website, you know, I've got all this ready. When I'm adding new web content, what are some of the main criteria I should be looking for?
Video is a little bit of a beast unto itself, and is an important element to really take into consideration. So there's two guidelines inside of video that are very important, and that's ensuring that closed captioning is provided, and that way audio descriptions are provided. So closed caption, a lot of people just rely on using, let's say, YouTube to use the automatic transcription process. And as great as that tool is from a convenience perspective, it's not 100% accurate. So you'll see, if you've ever read through the transcript on closed captioning on some of the videos you put up, the end result that a deaf user might be reading could be extremely thrown off and even offensive about trying to interpret what the video is talking about. So it'd be beneficial to actually, you know, get a recording, have a digital conversion of your transcript to actual text, manually edit it to make sure it's correct, and upload that to YouTube so that you're seeing the real transcript of the audio instead of the automatic one. And that's a huge plus to end user. And that provides a lot of value for not even users who are just deaf, because if your users are watching your website on the mobile device, whether on the train, whether at work when they're not supposed to be, they're reading the video. They're watching the video, but they're reading the subtext because they don't want the audio to be on.
Yep.
So that's a huge added bonus of your additional users that you may not be realizing are impacted by your closed captioning not being correct. And the second one is audio description. This is what gets most businesses, because they don't know what audio description is. So audio description is a secondary track, so to speak, for your video that describes what's going on inside the video for the visually impaired. So let's say you had a video that was an information tool about how to build a bike or how to cook the perfect pancake, whatever it may be. You're putting up this type of content marketing all the time. And with that, your users with a visual disability can listen to the video. They're not watching the video. So a secondary version of the video is supposed to be provided with audio descriptions on that has a narrator track that's actually describing the content of the video itself, such as to make the perfect pancake, you take the batter, he's putting it flat on the grill, he uses a spatula, it has this prong, he's flipping it over. Like actually describing what isn't being announced verbally in the video so they can get a sense of what the video's doing.
Yeah, and that makes sense from an SEO standpoint too, because it gives Google more and YouTube more content to
Absolutely.
Read what's going on, to rank it better.
Absolutely.
And you'll increase searchability. So it, once again, makes complete sense. And then, when it comes to content and this type of content, the other thing I've heard about a lot of is people without physical stores, people with e-commerce stores, especially like Shopify stores, getting hit with these lawsuits. What's unique about e-commerce stores that they need to be looking out for?
Well, that's where it gets into a gray area from a legal perspective, and you want to look at it from two sides. I think all businesses that have a customer base that you really want to be appealing to and trying to increase your customer base, you really want to work about adding accessibility anyways. Those that are required by law at the moment really are just the ones that are physical retail stores, such as a retail presence, a restaurant, doctor's office. So from a legal perspective, someone who owns a Shopify site that actually doesn't have a physical presence, they could get a lawsuit, but it could be thrown out pretty easily because there's no standards that say they have to have digital. They can't correlate the ADA lawsuit to them at this point, so there's no grounds for it. Yeah. So mostly, like I said, they could get sued, but that could get tossed out pretty easily. It doesn't mean
I'm going to stop you there. Just to remind you, neither Jamie or I are attorneys. If you're always consult an attorney.
Thank you. Absolutely. I agree with that, hands down, potentially. always consult a lawyer about the legal ramifications of the lawsuits. But as the guidelines are set up at this moment, there isn't that clear connection. But it doesn't stop lawyers from trying. And the biggest thing too is laws are always changing. Like mm-hmm. WCAG 2.1 was just released mid June last year, which is just the next phase of Element with your WCAG guidelines. So as the DOJ is adopting these more and more, there could be another advancement, which now indicates, hey, all websites have to be compliant. So it doesn't hurt to be proactive and be responsible, but it can hurt you for ignoring it and pretending it won't go away. So from an e-commerce perspective, absolutely, you really should be paying attention to looking at how your website operates from a keyword perspective. Are your products listed a certain way? Being able to use a test screen reader for yourself if you don't want to be working with an agency, just see how it's being announced. And that will give you an insight as to how robust your website is and how many problems there are.
Yeah. And if I'm a, I'm a small e-commerce person, just getting started, a few products out there, and I want to prevent getting sued, what would you say are the top five things I should be looking at?
Okay. So two things. Number one, platform. Choose a platform that's as you're reviewing into it. Let's use Shopify example. I'm not picking on any brands at the moment. See if they have an accessibility statement. Because if as a provider of a tool, if their stance behind accessibility exists, ideally you can expect that the technology behind it is being vetted by developers, being constantly reviewed and improved. So the only responsibility on you as an e-commerce provider will be content, which is the other half of the equation. So the technology platform is side one, which you may not be responsible for, but you can choose the good platform to begin with. But as an author, you really want to get clear about naming images. You want to be sure that as you're putting content up, that it's not just strictly a 100% image-laden website. Like, you have to have valuable text on the page as well. Anytime that you have text within an image, try to determine, can that text actually live outside of an image directly on the page to make it more accessible for someone who's using a magnification tool? And, you know, naming conventions. Don't just name this shirt. If someone wants to buy your product line, do they know what product they're actually buying? Is this a pink shirt? Is this a blue shirt? Is it large? Is it small? Is it buttoned? Like, provide that value for someone. If you were saying, if you close your eyes and you had to buy a product right now, how would someone describe that product to you?
Yeah. I mean, that's super important. And once again, SEO friendly.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's taking that time to do it from the beginning before you get 100 SKUs. And right. You're trying to figure it all out. Very cool. Very cool. So, like I said, so what do you see as the biggest problem out there when it comes to this with business owners? What is the biggest mistake that they're making?
Waiting. Awareness. not believing that it doesn't apply to them. So as a business owner, find out. So it may or may not apply to you, but find out. And then if it does apply to you, take a proactive stance on creating an accessibility strategy before it's too late. So you're in good hands when you're not in the realm of a lawsuit. You know, for someone's not identified you as an at-risk target, that you're a $1 million business and they're looking to make some money off of you. If you're growing and you recognize that you could be at risk, and you think, well, I believe in accessibility, I believe in equal technology access for all, create it as a goal with inside of your mission, because your users are also your employees. Your users are also your stakeholders, your business owners, your anyone that works or accesses your technology is a user, and any one of them or their family could be affected by a disability that you don't realize that you're affecting. So why not take that stance of saying, I want to increase this opportunity and look good in their eyes, create a better website, create a more inclusive website, and even grow my clients while I'm doing it.
Yes, I love that. I love it. I love it. So once again, if someone wants to get a hold of you, Jamie, tell us a little about your website, your offer, and how to get a hold of you.
Okay, perfect. Well, my offer is available at martechnology.com, and that's martechnology.com/offer. And what I'm offering is a one-page micro review of the top five issues that might put you at risk from a website compliance. And that's a good point to really get a sense for yourself, you know, what should I do with this? If your website's in good standing, great, that's fantastic. But if you are at risk, that could be an opportunity for a conversation to see, well, how do I deal with this? Do I want to create a strategy? Do I want to talk to new agency about improving my website before it's too late? Or should I talk to a lawyer? And all those are opportunities for you to look at. But starting with that at-risk review to help determine for yourself, does this make sense for me? Because not knowing is the biggest place of issue that you can be coming from.
Yes, yes. And I mean, I personally know people that have been sued. So if you don't think it can happen to you, I mean, e-commerce owners to accountants to lawyers to dentists, it can happen, and it's happening more and more frequently. So that's why we did this. I want to make sure everyone is in the know and can offer, you know, access awesome services like Jamie's. I mean, he's a great guy, knows what he's doing, very professional, and obviously he's done all the certifications and is doing as much as possible. He's not just saying, I read a page document and now I know it.
Right. Absolutely.
Awesome, Jamie. Well, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Ian. It was great to be here.
It was great to have you. And thank you all for listening to the Garlic Marketing Show. This has been Ian and Jamie, and thanks for taking us on your journey. Video. You know it'll make you an authority. You know it will get you more leads, better leads that close faster and spend more with you. And video stories will help you be remembered and connect with those perfect clients. The problem is, where do you start? Storycruise.com is the place to go. It's like a film crew with an S. What's your strategy? Do you do it yourself? Do you hire a videographer? An agency? Do you need an editor? How do you know if they really know your business and how to make videos for business that work? The answer to all of this and more can be found at storycruise.com. It is the place to find the latest video marketing strategies, the best gear for your business, as well as videographers, editors, and agencies near you that are trained in video storytelling for business. Go to storycruise.com/garlic to get special insider info for listeners of the Garlic Marketing Show, including special access to several of my courses, including my case story course. Go to storycruise.com/garlic to get a whole bunch of special offers just for listeners of the Garlic Marketing Show. Whether you're looking for a videographer or to do it yourself, go to storycruise.com/garlic to get started today.
That's it for the Garlic Marketing Show. If you want to get the inside scoop and the latest techniques, make sure to follow Ian Garlic on Facebook.